Yeah, hi. This is Lucas Barfield, and thanks for tuning into the Cannabis Corner right here on 101.9 FM Radio Tacoma, right here in Tacoma. If you'd like to learn more about the show and what I'm going to be talking about today, you can follow me on Twitter at MJIsMedicine. So thanks for tuning in. This is a show about cannabis, and we do talk about current events and the things going on with cannabis, as well as some information on medical cannabis and recreational cannabis and policy in Olympia around the plant and things going on in the nation and the world around cannabis. And I'm very pleased to be on the air. Just want to kind of give a shout out. I had two people kind of inquire about the show. They heard one guy was hearing my show just driving around Tacoma on FM radio and went inquiring around Facebook on who that was and found Radio Tacoma. That was great. And then I had another friend that I only see from time to time say that he had heard me on the show on Radio Tacoma. So really great that Radio Tacoma is getting out there. If you're tuning into my show, be sure to check out some of the other shows right here on Radio Tacoma. And if you would like to do a show yourself, let's say you have something that you are very passionate about, if you have something you do well or something that you want to share with the world, and you would like to put together a 30-minute to 1-hour radio show, please get in contact with us and we can help you get your show going and get you on the air. And we would love to have you on here. Radio Tacoma is a local community radio station right here in Tacoma. So thanks so much for tuning in again. And let's get started with our cannabis headlines for the week. So the first one article comes from The Hill. And it's something that we all know. I just want to reiterate some of these things that are in this article. And that is that MJ opinions are changing. Two-thirds of Americans believe that cannabis should be legalized for recreational use. That was a Gallup poll, and this is the highest level ever. And it's a sort of a sea change. So in 1996, only 25% of Americans believed that cannabis should be legalized. In 2012, when Washington and Colorado jumped into the game with legalized cannabis, it was 48%. And now it's up to 94% of medical marijuana. People believe that people should be able to use medical marijuana to help treat conditions. So that is great news as far as cannabis policy goes. However, of course, you know what I'm going to say next. Only fewer than 5% of lawmakers in the House of Representatives have this view. So we, again, as we do with many issues, run into a problem with our lawmakers and what they believe or what they think should be done and what the people think should be done. So this poll really shows that politicians really should start stepping up and embracing cannabis policy because obviously it is popular. At the least, medical marijuana. I mean, really. What other issue are you going to find in the United States politics right now where 94% of Americans believe in something, okay? So that shows that medical cannabis, at the least, is very, very popular. And then we're up to 66% believe recreational marijuana should be legal. Then that is a very high number, too. So politicians really need to start paying attention to this, and let's see some change at the federal level with cannabis, because right now we are sort of stuck in this rut. The state issue, the states' right issue, states are coming online with cannabis, but there are people still getting arrested all over the place in the United States for marijuana today, tomorrow, and for the foreseeable future, as far as we can tell. So we need some leadership in Washington. We need some politicians to look and see these polls and start take this as an issue and something that can really help our country. So that was written by Paul Armentano, Normal's deputy director, wrote that article. So check that over at The Hill. So next up we have Virginia. The House of Representatives pulled together some groups and some other lawmakers and had a sort of a meeting to talk about decriminalizing Virginia in the upcoming legislative session. And they're just wanted to get a plan going, and this may lead to a bill in 2018 in Virginia. Now, I'm surprised they won't go with total recreational cannabis, but it is still sort of the South, so a little baby steps. But I think what is happening in Virginia is D.C. has medical cannabis, and they also have recreational cannabis. So what is happening in D.C., some of that the cannabis in D.C. is being diverted or sort of leaking out into Virginia, and the police agencies are just like, we can't really deal with this anymore. It's too many people using this. Too many people know that this is a great medicine, and we just cannot arrest our way out of this issue, nor should they want to. Actually, the police, I think, should be encouraging people to be using medical cannabis because it keeps them from using more serious drugs like opiates and other pharmaceuticals. So there's this starting to be a sea change in the United States, and it would be great if Virginia would just go a little bit further than decriminalization, but, you know, that's what we're going to get for now. So next up in headlines is, so this next article is something that's happening here in Washington State, too, and it's going to be happening in California, too. A study says that, you know, California just legalized marijuana last year, and it's kind of surprising it took them so long, but they did, and the study says that if California puts their high taxes on marijuana, that the illicit market is just going to flourish. Why is that? Because if you're charging all this money in a store for cannabis, but then a state like California, I think I did an article a couple months ago that said California produces like 13 million pounds of marijuana a year, and they only use like 2.5 million pounds. So they have a surplus of marijuana in California. And they're saying that taxes could be up to 45% in some areas. So if you're taking cannabis, you know, the producers and the processors and everybody has to make their profit. So if you're taking that and then tacking 45% on top of that, I don't even want to speculate on the prices, but the prices, and I do know for a fact, talking to a friend already, that cannabis is pretty expensive already in California. So they're talking about the prices going even higher. And so what you're going to end up with is a system where just a select group of people use the system because they can afford it, the clean and so-called, you know, great state marijuana, and other people who can't afford the high prices, which is probably going to be the majority of people, are just going to continue to use marijuana and get cannabis on the black, on the illicit market. And it's a shame because the state has no one else to blame but themselves because they know that this was going to happen. What they should be doing is bringing these illicit market people into the fold and saying, hey, come grow cannabis for us and try to work with growers and try to keep the price low so they can, because there's obviously enough supply of cannabis in California, but of course the California government wants to get their 45%. And that works for some things, but it doesn't work for cannabis. We found out that if people want to get marijuana for cheap, or if they want to get it, then they'll get it because it is a medicine, and a lot of people know that, and they want to use it. So California needs to figure a way out of this. The local and state governments need to work together and try and keep the taxes low. And we are sort of dealing with this same issue in Washington, maybe not to the same extent, but Washington is still trying to capture. I mean, they'll tell you that every year more and more people will be using their recreational system. I can't really speculate if that plan is working, but I do know that cannabis in the marijuana stores is, you know, it's not really expensive. It's actually a good price, but people, I think, are still using the illicit market, and I think that the word is out there, and what you hear is that the cannabis on the illicit market is better than what's in the store. So California may be suffering with the same problems because we have a pretty high tax, too. It says in the article that the only other state that is going to be taxing as high as California is Washington State. And they said in the article that Washington State taxes cannabis at 50%, but it's like more like 37% on a state level. But then when you tax sales tax on top of that, it could get up to 50% in some places, which is really high. So, and the some of the problems are just coming to the surface, and a lot of people are saying that the California system is not even ready to roll out on January 1st. So we'll see what happens in California. Keep an eye on that. And then moving from California, we're kind of going over a lot of state stuff today. Moving from California, we're going to move over to Texas. And Texas is a big state, and they have decided to embrace the high CBD model of marijuana. So for those of you who are just kind of tuning in, cannabis is made up of a couple different compounds, THC and CBD being the two most prevalent. And CBD is short for cannabidiol or cannabidiol, and it is a very strong and very potent medicine. And people have bred cannabis. People have bred cannabis to get CBD high levels in the CBD and lower levels of THC. And in fact, I believe if you think about it, cannabis was probably high CBD first in a lot of varieties because it was the hemp. So, but back to Texas. Texas is doing the high CBD model, but the critics say the problem is that they only are giving 3 licenses to growers in Texas. Now, everybody knows that Texas is a big place. Just go there and they'll tell you. So it's just the critics, I believe, on this one are right because they're saying, well, that's just 3 licenses for the whole state. Not only is that monopolistic behavior, it's really going to cut down on supply because those 3 growers, can 3 growers supply enough cannabis to supply Texas? I mean, who knows? And Texas kind of runs into the same problem as California because they're right on the border with Mexico. And if they don't have enough supply and if they're not conducting their system correctly or putting too much taxes on it like other states, then the system's just not going to work. And you're going to have very few people signing up because, again, Mexico, I don't think they have a lot of high CBD cannabis, but, you know, high CBD cannabis does treat a lot of the same thing as high THC cannabis. So people will still be using illicit market marijuana from Texas, from Mexico. So Texas really needs to play this straight, and the critics need to stay on Texas so they open up it a little bit more to 3 licenses, because that seems like too few a license for such a large state. So, yeah, thanks for tuning in. My name is Lucas Barfield, and you are tuned into the Cannabis Corner right here on 101.9 FM Radio Tacoma. Next up, we're going to get into our topic of today. And today I want to just talk about real quick, sort of shed some light on how marijuana or cannabis or hemp actually became illegal. Because for the most of the history of the world, this plant was not illegal. And very few governments or ruling bodies, I think, paid much attention to it. And in fact, an argument could be made that in the Middle East and in Indian stuff, they use the what's so-called Indian hemp for profitable ventures and use it for good things. So that all changed right around starting in the 1800s. It kind of started going the other way. So we've talked about this before. Cannabis evolved on the steppes of Eurasia around, prehistory and throughout the Middle Ages, and throughout that time, it migrated from the steppes of Eurasia down through the Middle East, through India, up across Asia, and then started to begin the move down through Africa, and was all around. It never really made it to Europe until the Middle Ages, but they were using it for rope and fiber mostly because it was hemp. And then they started to breed certain varieties and found out that the flowers had medicinal or psychoactive properties. So then people started to breed it even more and make these stronger varieties of THC and make medicines and recreational hashish and all the different things that are in the Middle East around the marijuana plant. And that was going along just fine, thank you very much. And then in the early 1800s and late 1700s, so the English started moving into India and Africa and around. Then they started finding this p- plant and these concoctions that were being made. And a lot of these were hashish, where they scrape off the resin and the pollen, and they would compress it in the bricks. A lot of it would be, you know, cannabis mixed with alcohol to make extracts. So they started using these and experimenting with these, and a doctor by the name of William O'Shaughnessy from Ireland took cannabis from India back to England and Ireland, and this is the first Westerner that really began to popularize using cannabis as a medicine. And it really took off. And this is sort of well documented that all over the United States, for much of the early 20th century, you could find cannabis extractions in many medicine shops. But there were problems. Throughout that time, they were using the cannabis and they were using these alcohol extracts, and everything would settle to the bottom, or they wouldn't shake it up, or they would make it too strong. And there were people that were taking this for medicine that were, let's just say, they were taking it for like stomach problems. They were going along just fine, and then one day they'd accidentally take too much, and people were getting what's called cannabis poisoning. And this is that's what they called it. And it is such a thing today. If you eat too many edibles, people will tell you that you will have problems. And so this was something going on then, and so they started to have problems with dosing. And you can go into the British Pharmacological sort of society. I can't remember the exact name of it, but I think it's the... I have to look it up, but I did look it up. You can go back and see journalistic articles starting in the 1800s complaining about dosing with marijuana and cannabis. So they began to complain about this, and I even went back and found the original write-up that William O'Shaughnessy wrote and started pushing this medicine. But then around the 1850s, 60s, 70s, as it went forward, little articles started popping up about cannabis poisoning. So as people went forward, they began to develop other medicines. And sort of the sea change started happening in the 1900s, that a little drug made from the bark of a willow tree, another plant, sort of began to overtake cannabis as a preferred medicine. And that drug was aspirin, made by the German pharmaceutical company Bayer. And this Bayer started working to make cannabis illegal, or started to promote aspirin. And whether they actually worked directly to make it illegal or whether they were behind the scenes, I don't really know. But it seems a little suspicious to me that right around when aspirin started coming out, that people in Italy and people... Because the first mention of cannabis on the world stage was in Italy, was by Italy, the delegation in Geneva in 1905. Somebody mentioned it and said, hey, we need to regulate this so-called Indian hemp. Well, nobody talked about it again, or he didn't hear about it again until 1925 at the Opium Conference there in Geneva. Egypt started complaining about it, and they voted on a resolution to start monitoring so-called Indian hemp around the world. So that was right about the time that the pharmaceutical industry was getting involved with their medicines and aspirin and all that. So it just seems it was just all a confluence of bad things going on. And this, in the United States, we'll get to this in a minute, racism was involved as well. So the United States did not sign the thing in Geneva, but came back, and they didn't sign it, but they did start paying attention to it, because you started having reports out of the Southwest of so-called devil weed, and so-called, you know, they would have reports of Mexicans going crazy and killing their family and all these different things happening. And there were things in the newspaper that, you know, probably did happen, but people were interrogated for days, and then they would blame it on marijuana. The man smoked a marijuana cigarette and then killed his daughter. So things like this. And it just spread across the United States. And on top of that, this is right around the time of alcohol. So cannabis can intoxicate you. So it was wrapped up in there with alcohol too. You had the racism thing going on. You had the pharmaceutical thing going on. Jack Hara theorizes in his book, The Emperor Has No Clothes, this is about the time that DuPont got involved, the synthetic fiber industry got involved. You also had paper getting involved. So it was just a bad time to be a marijuana plant in the world, and especially in the United States. In 1937, because you have to understand, hemp, marijuana, whatever you want to call it, was prolific in the United States. The slave, they had the imprisoned Africans harvesting it. George Washington grew hemp. It was everywhere. So this was a common thing. But they began to demonize it. And then finally, in 1937, and the word is that a lot of the people didn't even know what they voted on because they called it marijuana. Nobody knew what marijuana was. They thought it was some horrible drug, but it's actually cannabis. Everybody called it cannabis. So in 1937, they voted to pass the Marijuana Stamp Act, and FDR signed it. Everybody loves to talk great about FDR, but FDR is the president who made marijuana illegal. And what this said is you had to have a stamp. If you had marijuana, you had to have a stamp. Nobody ever had a stamp. So if you had it, you get arrested. This was the law of the land all the way up through 1968, when a man by the name of Timothy Leary tried to cross the United States border in Mexico with a joint and got busted. You might have heard of Timothy Leary. And he took his case all the way to the Supreme Court. And they ended up throwing out the Marijuana Stamp Act. Timothy Leary did that. So you not only can thank him for LSD, thank him for getting rid of the Marijuana Stamp Act. So after the Supreme Court told the United States government to stop enforcing the Marijuana Stamp Act, the United States, in theory, did not have a federal marijuana law until 1972 with the passage of the Controlled Substances Act. And this made Schedule 1, 2, and 3 for narcotics. Actually, there might be five schedules, but they put marijuana into Schedule 1 as one of the most dangerous drugs. And there it has stayed ever since. And you have Richard Nixon's drug czar saying, hey, let's attach marijuana to the hippies and the African Americans, and let's use it as a weapon to go in and bust them and take down their groups. And that's what they did. And it is still used today. And we've talked about this before. Cannabis policy in the United States has been used by police and the government as a hammer to smash and beat on poor and minority communities in the United States. Now, that is a fact. You can go and check it out, state after state, city after city, statistic after statistic says that African Americans, minorities, and poor are more likely to get arrested for marijuana than their white and affluent counterparts. Those are proven statistics. So that paradigm, that thing, has been in place since 1972. You can make an argument it was since 1937 and probably even before that, but in real earnest, since 1972. And then you had Reagan's war on drugs, and it wasn't until 1996 that we started to see some of this stuff getting rolled back, with California passing medical marijuana, then Colorado and Washington, then Michigan, then all the other states that came on along after that, all the way up until last year when Florida passed medical cannabis. And now we're up to 8 states plus D.C. with recreational marijuana, plus CBD states, CBD laws all around the United States, including much of the South. So what we are doing is reclaiming what was taken from the people. Cannabis was taken from the people starting in the early 1900s. And so now we are trying to reverse that and bring back this medicine that has evolved and been with people for so long. So that is a really quick history, as far as I've read and studied and know, of how cannabis became illegal. And you can go online and look up. There's actually a good write-up from Consumer Reports in the early 1970s called "How Did Marijuana Become Illegal?" or something to that effect. And there's something called the Schaefer Drug Library. So just Google that. They also have a couple other great articles. There's a lot of information out there on this, and I'm just passing it back out there on the airwaves on here on the Cannabis Corner. So thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me and what I am doing right now with cannabis on Twitter at MJIsMedicine. And if you use MJIsMedicine on Facebook, you can also find out what we're doing with cannabis and follow what's going on in the world and locally. So we are about to end the show, and thank you so much for tuning in again. And this week, it's a bust. Hold on 1 second. I'm visually impaired, so I gotta scroll down through this stuff with the little voice talking in my ear. So this comes from Nigeria. And this is actually a police van. And I thought this was kind of funny. They called it Indian hemp in the sort of subtitle of the title of the article. They called it Indian hemp, but then they kept calling it. They said in the police van, they found 30 bags of weeds. So I thought that was interesting. They were calling it weeds. The weeds were found. They never said how much 30 bags of weeds were. And is the police were actually the one running the weeds down the road to the other town. And that was in Lokoda. It's probably not saying that right, but Nigeria. So cannabis is a big thing in Africa. And there we have a bust. And we're out of here with the show. So thank you again so much for tuning in. See you next time. Bye-bye.